Book 11, Women's Work. Dawn came slowly over the ocean, and though Aeneas knew he needed to bury his dead and mourn his friends, the first thing he set about was honouring Mars, of course. He cut down some wood and created almost an effigy, decorating it with all the spoils of Mezentius, his armour and his shield still pierced with spears, and dedicated it to the gods. Aeneas looked at it for a while, and then, with a sigh, he turned to address his men who had woken up and come to find him. He struggled to think of the words. "The hardest part is over, lads," Aeneas gestured to the armour still coated in blood. "Mezentius was the only enemy we really had to fear, and he's dead. We'll make easy war against the Latins now, I'm sure of it. You've all proved yourselves once again. For the moment, though, we need to help our friends get through Hades. And I..." He almost choked on his words and had to check himself. "I'll arrange for Pallas to be sent back to his father." Leaving his men to it, and wiping his eyes roughly on the back of his arm when he thought no one was looking, Aeneas traipsed back to his own tent. Acestes, the old ward of Pallas, who had been a loyal servant to Evander, was guarding over Pallas's body. A whole throng of Trojans and their attendants had gathered about the body, and the lamentation was appalling. Aeneas didn't bother to hide his tears when he saw Pallas for the first time, his face pale and chest torn open and bloody. "Bloody Hades, this is not what I promised for your father." He sank to the ground beside the body. "Even now, he's probably thinking of you riding out into war, offering prayers for your safety. He'll have no idea. He couldn't possibly imagine. It makes you wonder if it's all worth it, doesn't it? This? What good has this war done you, Pallas? Is this how we return from war now? Triumph of dead children paraded for their fathers. Oh, yeah, they had a glorious death. They didn't die cowards, but what's the point of them dying, of anyone dying, for a city they'll never see? What's the point of all of this?" Aeneas organised for 1,000 men to carry Pallas home. It was the least he could do. The Trojans quickly weaved him a soft, shaded couch to be carried in, and his body lay there like a flower, a soft lily or a violet, cut by the thumbnail of a young girl. Aeneas ransacked his belongings and found one of the few things he still had that truly meant something to him, that could be the biggest show of his regret and mourning to Evander, a cloak of purple and gold woven for him by Dido. He stared at it for a moment, felt the weight of the fabric in his hands before tucking it over Pallas. He added spoils from the battle to the funeral procession, chariots drenched in blood, Pallas's horse and his armour, and a whole host of mourners. He even had some Rutulians they had captured sacrificed as honour killings to the gods of the underworld. As the procession marched away and faded into the horizon, Aeneas sighed. "Farewell, Pallas." He turned back into camp. As he did, envoys from the Latins appeared, bearing olive branches wrapped in wool. Again, I know this is not the time or the place, guys, but every time I think about this, I picture like marshmallows or louvre. Sorry, it's not the image you needed, is it? Bearing olive branches and begging for Aeneas to allow them to gather their dead. "Who on earth do you think I am?" His voice broke slightly as they appealed to him, their tears tracking silvery veins through the dirt on their cheeks. "Of course you can bury your men. I never wanted this war in the first place. All I ever wanted is peace and just to be friends. I just wanted us to be allies. I'm only here because the fates have forced me. I promise you, I don't know how many times I have to tell you, I wanted no part of this. I have nothing against you. Turnus is the only one who should be fighting, who should have lost his life today. Not any of these innocent men. He should have come to me and me alone, and then this would have been decided without any of this." He gestured across at the bodies scattered across the ground like rubble. Please, take your men. The Latins certainly hadn't expected that. This wasn't the arrogant, cruel Aeneas that Turnus had painted for them. Why, this man seemed to have feelings, and quite a lot of them at that. Drances, one of the older men who, coincidentally, wasn't a fan of Turnus and who we'll meet again in a minute, approached Aeneas. You're a better man than your fame gave you credit for, Aeneas. Thank you. We'll be sure to tell Latinus how you feel, and even more, I'm sure after this, we'll all be more than willing to help you raise your new Troy. Turnus can fight his own battles for all we care. Pain in the arse. The other Latins murmured in agreement, and thus 12 days of peace, a truce, commenced, and devastated men on both sides buried their friends. Of course, our old friend Rumour is never far behind. She was busy overwhelming the palace of Evander, and soon the funeral procession was met by a long line of men bearing torches on either side of the road leading into Pelentium. When Pallas's body came into view, the cries of the women set the city ablaze, but no power on Olympus or Earth could restrain Evander. He pushed his way desperately through the crowds, forced his way past the bodies, and flung himself on the cold, lifeless body of his son. And he howled. What have I done? What have I done? What have I done? His beard was matted with tears, the dirt and dried blood on his son's body, but he didn't care and he buried his face in his son's limp, golden hair. Where are the gods we so rely on, that I pray to every day and night? Where are they now? If I have overstayed my welcome on this earth, this is all wrong. Parents are never meant to outlive their children. If your mother... I do not blame the Trojans, of course, but if I had gone in your place, I am sure your death was bold and courageous. And people for thousands of years will remember your name, my son, and the great things that you achieved. To think, if you had just been that bit older, I am sure it would have been Turnus's father weeping now. Turnus's father holding the body of his son. You were too young, but you were brilliant, my boy. Aeneas, I know, will avenge you. Dawn broke. Funeral pyres were built high, all among the shores, on both sides of the battle. Three times the men ran around the burning bodies of their dead friends in a great funeral procession, their armour gleaming in the firelight and the winds full of their rage and their tears. Some men even threw the spoils they had won into the flames after their comrades, as offerings maybe to protect them in the underworld. What use were spoils and symbols of your glory when you had no one to share them with? On the third day, when the final flame died out, they buried their friends. The grief was loudest, its most pungent within the city of Latinus. The Latins were distraught, having lost sons, brothers, husbands, fathers, all for what? Turnus's greed and insecurity? Why hadn't he faced Aeneas alone? It was only his marriage, only a matter that concerned him and him alone. All these lives had been lost because of his pride. A martyr, of course, the queen, in case you've forgotten who she was, spoke in his favour. She really did think him quite a dish. And then, to top it all off, Latinus had asked the city of Diomede for help. He'd sent gifts and horses and prayers and everything, but they'd been unsuccessful. Fate, truly, finally, was in Aeneas's court. Latinus had known this all along, really, and now, looking at the miles and miles of the dead, the ash and the blood and the dirt that seemed to cake everything, he knew the gods were reminding him of this too. Reminding him of his place in the world. Knowing what needed to be done, Latinus summoned a council in his palace, of all the best men, of course. He began by asking his messengers for the full tale of despair from Diomede.
My liege,
Venulus, the lead messenger, stood up. We found Diomede and the Aetolians in their new city. We told him all that's been going on, like, and we gave him all the nice presents that you'd sent, and he said this.
Look here, lads. From what I see of it, you've been good till now. Fortune's blessed your lot. Some of us are still suffering from that feckin' great war. Has anyone even heard from Odysseus, lads? Like, have we actually, did we ever hear back from him? Been a couple of years now on it. Anyway,
there's now even happened to us that Priam wouldn't pay, bless his soul.
I mean, did you hear what happened to that poor sod in Agamemnon? Oh my god, like, feckin' shambles, the whole thing. I keep thinking, like, when's my turn?
When are them gods, you know, so we call them, when they're gonna come for me?
I'll be looking over my shoulder until I kick a bucket, I tell you. No mistaking it. I feel for you, lads, I do, but I have more problems at the moment and I don't have any issues with them Trojans anymore. Them Trojan lads, not at all, they're fine. There's no time in life to bear grudges, like, you know what I mean? It were down to good luck, really, that we won it all, to be honest. If I were you, I'd save your gifts, though, you know, they're dead pretty, and cheers for bringing them up. They're not too heavy, like, it's going to be a right pain to take back, isn't it? Soft about that, lads, but anyway. Save your gifts, and I'd give them to Aeneas, to be honest with you. It's fucking terrifying when you get him, you know, behind a sword and a shield. Oh, I don't envy you in the slightest. Anyway, have fun.
Venulus had barely finished speaking in this truly terrible accent when a great roar rose up among the Latins, like when rocks block a river and the trapped waters growl and seethe against the banks on either side. Latinus let them get this out of their system, and then, when all fell silent, he began.
I have said all along that this is a misguided war, my friends. We are fighting against the will of the gods. This is a war that cannot be won. No one can fault your bravery, but this is not a time for bravery. It is a time for realism. There is some land of mine a little way along the Tiber. I propose we give this to the Trojans as an act of friendship, and that we ask them for peace, to become partners in this kingdom. If they agree to settle, then great. If they are so desperate for war, as some as you claim, then we will give them enough of our brilliant Italian oak for 20 ships, and we will send them on their way. I think we should do it properly. Send an envoy of 100 men, the best of you, with the gifts that Diomede sent back. This will save us.
I mean, that sounds pretty sensible, doesn't it? But, you know, that's not going to work. This is the Aeneid. This isn't, you know, real life or a sensible story. Things don't work out that way. Otherwise, you know, it'd be over about 10 books ago. So, Drances, who we met previously, stood up. Now, to make it clear, Drances was a pretty good public speaker. And if he'd been sensible, he probably could have arranged the others to do this and there'd be no more issues and we could all go home and have a cup of tea and it'd be great. But no. Drances hated Turnus. He was jealous of his reputation and his skill and his just good standing and his parentage more than anything. So he said,
"What you suggest, my lord, is great for sure, but we all know how fortune can be. What you omit to mention, and what I don't mind pointing out, is that there is only one person here who really needs to get his shit together. I am not afraid to say, though he threatened to kill me the other day behind the market, just to put it out there, that it is his recklessness, and it's the recklessness of this one person that is causing all of our grief. And he's quite happy to see our best and youngest die for him, while he runs away to save his own neck. And did you guys not see that? Now, last week he went hit on a boat. Of course I should mention, dear king, that no man, no war should overrule your right as a father to give your daughter away to whomever you please. But irrespective of this, Turnus, yes, you Turnus, I'm talking to you right now. Why have you done this? What did you think you would gain from this war exactly? I mean, other than a bride, I mean, a bloodbath is never a good start for a marriage that tends to happen like 5 years in, am I right, lads? Anyway, we're a bit fed up of this war, to be honest, Turnus. Look at me.
I despise you. I loathe every single bit of you. And yet here I am, on my knees, humiliating myself in front of every single person that I know to beg you for peace. Give up. Or, at the very least, give us up. And fight in the ears like a true man. Face to face.
You are so full of shit, Drankos. Turner spat. He's, you know, very eloquent. So full of wise words and speeches, but where are you in the middle of combat? When we're, you know, deep in shit, surrounded by death on all sides, you can accuse me of being a coward all you want when you've killed as many men as I have. Hypocritical shit. Look at you, cowering away in your pretty council chambers. We're surrounded by enemies. Why don't we go out and meet some of them? Come on, prove yourself. Oh, you're hesitating. Is that because of your long tongue and your nimble feet? You're pathetic. These men have been defeated twice before, and we will do it again. But, you know, by all means, keep stirring up a panic. It's probably the only thing you're good at. And, by the way, I wouldn't dirty my sword with your blood if I had the chance.
Turnus then turned to Latinus.
Look. Okay, I wouldn't be pushing for this if I honestly didn't think that we had a shot, okay? But see how brave your men are. Surely the ones who have died have gained more glory than, you know, they ever would have done so in life anyway. There must be more rallies we can reach and more resources. We've come so far already, Latinus. You forget that, you know, no one's lost yet. The Trojans have suffered just as much as us, and why are we going to give up at the last moment? Why are we stumbling over the threshold? Fortune comes and goes. Sure, Diomede may not help us, but we've got Messapus and Tolumnius, and we have Camilla, for Hades' sake. But, you know what, sure, if I really am the only obstacle to peace here, then I'll meet Aeneas alone. Though, remember, if I do, that you've offered me up, father of my bride. You've offered up my life. And so, despite all these lofty words, the Latins continued to bicker. Though this didn't last long, as a messenger came stumbling in to let them all know that Aeneas was on the move and the Etruscans were with him. There was immediate confusion. A great clamour of voices rose to the ceiling, like when a flock of birds settles in the tops of the trees as young men call for their armour and the fathers beg them not to go, and it was a riot of arms and men. And Turnus sat there amongst it all, amongst the panic and the confusion, and he grinned. "Don't trouble yourself, guys," he smirked. "Come back and have a chat. Let the enemy destroy our city. It's fortune's will." After a couple of minutes gloating, he got to his feet and ordered his men into action. Latinus went back to his palace, cursing himself again and again for not officially making peace to Aeneas, for not marrying him to Lavinia when he had the chance. The trumpet blew for battle. The Latins readied for death. A martyr, accompanied by Lavinia, went with the other women to offer prayers to Pallas. Turnus was armed, though we note here that his head was bare, so he wasn't wearing a helmet, and bristling in all his bronze and red glory, he charged out from the citadel in one mighty, exultant blaze, like when a stallion has broken free from his tether and burst from his stable, galloping over open plains and tossing his streaming mane in sheer delight. Camilla was the first to meet him with her Volscians at the city gate. "Let me go first, mate. I can do it alone. You man your city." "Fat chance," he laughed. "You know how grateful I am to have you, Camilla. But I've already got a plan. We'll go in together and ambush the Trojans. You could catch the Etruscans off guard, Aeneas has sent some of them ahead somewhere, but Aeneas himself, he's mine. So, ordering his allies into battle, Turnus then took himself off to the valley where he planned to ambush Aeneas, where there was a little plateau where you could see an enemy coming and attack them from any given side. We must remember that Turnus actually grew up here, and he would probably know all the hideouts, which, you know, at least gave him one advantage. At this moment, Diana was watching, though I reckon she was probably more like a chocolate fan rather than popcorn. She had, you know, probably a bag of Maltesers to watch this whole show unfold with. She passed the said share bag of Maltesers to Opis, one of her closest friends. You know, it is sad when you love a mortal so much and have to watch them die for literally no reason. Camilla has always been one of my favourites. Her father, Metabus, was driven from his kingdom and he took her with him as his only companion when she was just a baby. And he named her after her own mother, you know, Camilla. He was being attacked by men on all sides. I don't know what he did, but he clearly wasn't very good. And he got to a river. And he was going to swim across, but then he realised, oh man, I have a baby, the baby will drown, that's not great. So what he did, naturally, was he got his spear and he wrapped up the baby and tied her to the spear, which is actually a great idea. And he actually prayed to me, poor soul, and dedicated her to me as one of my suppliants, which has been great fun. And then he lobbed her across the river, spear, baby and all, far over, and, well, I, you know, be a bit bad of me to ignore him and them after that, really, wouldn't it? Be a bit harsh. So anyway, they both made it across and I made sure, you know, they stayed safe and in the company of herdsmen in the mountains, because no city would take them. He brought her up on the wilderness and taught her to fight properly and, you know, to hold, she could hold a javelin and shoot a bow by the time she was walking. It's pretty amazing, actually. He used to dress her in these lovely little tiger skins. Oh, anyway, all the mothers who met her were desperate for her to marry their sons. But, you know, she's only got eyes for me. And now she'll die in this silly little war. What a waste. Anyway, point being, Opis, will you do me a favour and take my weapons and kill whoever kills her? And don't forget to bring me Camilla's body when you're done, will you? Because I want to give her, you know, a proper burial. Thanks, babe. The battle was ablaze and growing closer and closer to the Latin walls. Men were flooding the plains, Trojans and Latins and all their allies, drawing their swords and their arms. Horses were neighing, pouring their hooves expectantly through the dust. There was a shout and the battle raged forwards, weapons showering thick as snow, curtaining the day in shadow. It was total disorder. As when the sea advances, rushing towards land, gushing over rocks and sand, and then hurrying back, sucking down pebbles and retreating on its waves, leaving the shore bare. So the Etruscans drove the Latins to their walls, and so they were then attacked and once had to flee themselves again and again, endless. The third time this happened, the fighting really began. Death came in full force. Blood was everywhere. Countless nameless bodies crumpled beneath one another, and amongst it all, vibrant and pulsating with fire and life, was Camilla. Even when she was forced to retreat, she still aimed her arrows from her golden bow in mid-flight. She could turn her hand to her spear, her double-headed axe, her bow with equal effortlessness. Her girls were all around her, Larina and Tulla and Tarpeia, and each of them with their own axe, together like the Amazons of Thrace, led by their own Hippolyte or Penthesilea, the great daughter of Mars. The men she brought down were endless. For every spear, arrow that left Camilla's hand, a Trojan hero fell. She killed broad huntsmen, she killed the tallest of the Trojans, she hacked down the sons of warriors, each as easily as if she was slaughtering lambs. In fact, the latter of these, the son of the warrior Aunus, a Ligurian, stood frozen to the spot when she approached him, absolutely terrified. He knew there was no escape, so he made a vain attempt at cunning. You can't be all that good if you're dependent on your horse for victory. Why don't you fight me on the ground, in real combat, like a man? Without a second's thought, boiling with rage at such an offence, Camilla leapt down from her horse and faced him. She didn't look worried in the slightest. Of course, the bloke made his escape on his own horse while he could.
Pathetic coward!
Camilla cried out. She ran, swift as fire, and managed to block the horse, seizing the reins. As easily as a falcon might snatch a dove mid-flight, ripping out its feathers and streaming its blood across the sky, so Camilla destroyed her enemy. Of course, this wasn't really on with fate and everything, so Jupiter gave Tarchon, the leader of the Etruscans, a little nudge, and he rallied his men back to battle.
What are you all doing?
Tarchon rode amongst his men.
Are you really just scared of one woman? A woman? For Jove's sake, I think you're all just lazy. I've never seen you all so pathetic. Do you even know what weapons are for? You've never been this slow at festivals. I mean, when there's a good shout to be had, you are never like this. Why don't you all just fuck off home if you're going to be so useless?
With this, he rushed off into battle, right towards Venulus, the Latin messenger that we mentioned earlier, tearing him off his horse and riding like fire across the plain, dragging Venulus along with him. Venulus fought back, mind, strength against violence, like an eagle against a great venomous snake. It came down to Aaron's to face Camilla. They were equals. She was the better runner, but he was more cunning. Wherever she went, he followed, swiftly, silently, waiting for his moment. He knew that he needed to catch her off guard. It so happened, then, that Chlorius appeared, a man who had once been a priest of Cybele and was now resplendent in his Trojan armour, both him and his horse decked out in purple and gold. He glimmered in the distance, what with his golden bow, his golden brooch, his saffron tunic. Camilla picked him out. Virgil here actually calls her desire for sports womanish, as it causes her demise, and there of course can be no greater insult than being called female, though it just makes me think, what about Euryalus and that ridiculous helmet in book 9? I mean, you know, that actually ended up killing him in Nisus, and that certainly wasn't called womanish then, was it? But you know, anyway, moving on from the patriarchy. Aaron saw she was distracted. So he offered up a little prayer to Apollo, reminded him of how embarrassing it was to be beaten by a girl, promised lots of sacrifices, etc., and even said he didn't care about the credit, he just wanted her dead. Nasty piece of work, really. But Apollo, who hadn't done much other than help Iulus, clicked his fingers. His mouth was full of popcorn, so he couldn't say much. Camilla would die, but so would Aaron's. And so he threw his spear, and Camilla and her girls watched in almost slow motion as it plunged through her chest and pinned her to the ground. Aaron fled, thrilled and terrified, like when a wolf kills a shepherd, knowing full well that this wasn't the end and he must mingle with the confusion of the battle to survive. Camilla was dying. She tried to pull the arrow from her heaving chest, but it was stuck in her ribs. She was growing pale. Her girls supported her. They had caught her as she fell, and they were covered in her blood from head to toe. Acca, she whispered to her closest companion, her most faithful. This is it. You must tell Turnus. Tell him to fight, to keep the Trojans away from the city. For now, so long. She held on to her reins until the very end and only dropped her weapons as she yielded to death, as her soul rushed furiously down to Hades. At this moment, a measureless noise erupted and the battle raged as never before. Now one of the best, the untouchable, had fallen.
Don't you worry, Camilla.
Opis had watched the entire ordeal from a mountain nearby.
Diana will not let your death be forgotten.
Slipping down from the hillside, Opis kept an eye out, and it wasn't long before Aaron's came, fittingly for his name, if you consider it, you know, running by.
Come back and face your death like a woman, you piece of shit!
She shrieked out and launched her arrow at him. Aaron's heard the whir and the hiss of the blade only moments before he felt it plant deep in his back. No one warned him. No one came for him. He lay there, dying in the dirt, while Opis smirked, wiped her hands, and soared back to Olympus. It all pretty much went to shit after that. Camilla's girls fled without their leader, and the Latins and all their allies were quick to follow, making for safety wherever they could. Nothing could stand in the way of the Trojans now. The first Latins to burst through their own gates were mingled with enemies hot on their heels, and consequently they were murdered on the threshold of their own home, amongst a chorus of wailing women. The gates were closed. People were too scared to let their own in for fear of their safety, and the men were slaughtered against the walls. Many fell on their own swords. Some, those shut out by their own parents, were crushed in the confusion of the rampage. The women of Latium, seeing Camilla as their example, her memory burning in their minds, joined in now and rushed to hurl all manner of missiles from their high walls, longing to join the men in a glorious death for their city. Turnus was still waiting for his ambush in the wood when Acca, Camilla's friend, found him. Camilla had fallen. Latium was falling. Panic was rising. In a frenzy, as Jupiter had decreed, Turnus left the woods to find his men, and scarcely had he left when Aeneas passed breezily by the spot he had just abandoned. They both made for the kingdom at once. Aeneas saw the smoking plains, and Turnus saw Aeneas and his relentless advance. The air was full of the breathing of horses, the clanking of armour, and the drumming of hooves. But night was approaching. The final battle would have to wait.